Welcome everyone to Radio Free Nintendo episode 41, brought to you by NintendoWorldReport.com. I'm your host, Mike Sklens. My cohorts this week include previews editor Carl Castaneda.
What's up, everybody?
Former director and reviews editor Jonathan Metz.
Hello.
And some other guy named Jonathan Lindemann.
Hey.
Steven is absent this week, and Lindemann very awesomely filled in because he's completely hilarious.
Is that? I'm not sure that's actually how it worked out.
No, not quite. Not quite. Actually, yeah, I was being too kind. We had a discussion earlier, and we decided that Steven is overexposed, so he's not allowed in this week's episode.
That's not the way it really happened.
I didn't think.
Didn't he actually beg to get on?
I think he's overexposed because I don't want to be fired. Because I think that Wendy is really, really just the heart and soul of this podcast. Is he done listening now? Okay. We basically kicked him off.
Well, yeah. No, what happened was during the week, Lindemann and I were talking, and we were both regretting that it's been so long since we've been on a podcast. So he said, hey, let's both do it this weekend. And basically, we got on Skype before Steven did, so we filled up our four slots and said five would be too much.
Yeah,
it would be chaos.
And he's on the Radio Trivia podcast also. Aww. I mean, it's not like he's missing out.
Yeah, if you guys haven't checked it out yet, you should definitely check out our Radio Trivia podcast. It's not on iTunes yet because it's still in pilot stage right now.
It's super cool.
Still in beta.
Yeah. So, what have you guys been playing this week? I guess I'll start with you, Carl.
Ooh, what have I been playing this week? I ran into some cash, actually. I found an old birthday $20 bill. So, I bought a virtual console card, and I got Donkey Kong Country. Pretty good. Maybe not as great as everyone says it is, but it definitely looks awesome. And, yeah, I like it. I've played through the first set of stages, and now I'm like halfway through the second set. So, yeah, I like it. That's pretty much it.
It's a good game. The sequel's better, but it's a very good game, nonetheless.
Yeah.
What about you, Lindemann?
That's pretty much all I've been playing, though.
Twilight Princess is owning my soul. That's all I've been playing. There's been a couple of 4 a.m. nights on weekdays when I should be sleeping, getting ready to go to work, doing something like that. So, and that's pretty much it. I was playing Gears of War for a long time, and then I got done with that. And I moved on to Zelda, so.
No, Johnny?
Okay, I've been playing a lot of stuff for once. I'm 60 hours into Final Fantasy XII, and I'm not going to talk about that anymore because I've done it before. I'm slowly, yeah, like, one song per day working my way through the hard level of Guitar Hero 2. It is unbelievably... It's getting to the point where, like, every song, I play it once and fail miserably, and then I have to go in the practice mode and slow it down and practice each little part and then kind of string it together, and then I barely survive through the full thing. But
yeah, that's rough.
I'm making progress, and I feel like I'm getting better, but man, I mean, it's killer on your wrists and your fingers to play those really fast songs. It's brutal.
Yeah.
I played through, this was about a week ago, but I played through and beat Kirby's Adventure on Virtual Console, and that was fun. And actually, I kind of a little bit regret what I wrote for VC Mondays, where I said that it's, you know, like really easy but still fun, because about halfway through the game, it actually starts to get pretty challenging. And towards the last couple of worlds out of, I don't know, 7 or 8 worlds total, I actually died enough that I had to continue a couple times. Because 1-ups become pretty rare. The Maxim tomatoes and the little potions, they start to become really difficult to find. A lot of times you lose more life trying to get them than they give you. And the game just gets really hard, actually. So,
mm-hmm. So how many hours did that take to beat?
I'd say I played it for 6 or 7 hours.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. Very respectable for $5.
That's how long it took me to beat Kirby 64.
Okay.
6 hours,
yeah.
I did it in one night.
Kirby 64 is still my favorite of that series, but I haven't played Superstar, so I'm hoping that gets released on VC very soon.
Yeah, I'll pick that up. As for myself, are you still more games you've been playing,
Johnny? Well, the other thing I was going to say, the game I haven't been playing is WarioWare, because I got it a couple weeks ago, and I've played it 2 or 3 times when I had friends over, but after the initial burst of trying to play through and unlock multiplayer mode, there's really not anything left to do. I think your review is spot on there. Like, when I have two or three friends over and we reach a certain critical mass of zaniness, then we'll play it. Mm-hmm. But if I'm just sitting around here, it's not a game I can really turn on and amuse myself. Yeah, and part of that is because of the lack of high score. But
yeah, it's disappointing.
The other thing I've been playing, this is not a video game, but actually the past few days I've been playing a lot of harmonica because my friend Jason Ricci has been in town playing concerts. He's the guy who provides our musical interludes for the podcast. And he's got some big news, actually. I can report this. As of this week, he has signed a record deal, his first record deal, and they're going to be recording an album in May, and it'll be out this fall.
Awesome.
So we'll have some we'll have some new music to use on the podcast, and he's been playing a lot of the new songs in the concerts here locally, and it's good stuff. I'm really excited.
Cool. Sweet.
Cool. As for me, I've just been playing in anticipation of this week's release of SSX Blur. I've been playing SSX 3. I picked up another character, and I've been conquering the mountain with that one.
Not on tour?
No, on tour is not as good. I have on tour, and I played a little bit of it, and I went right back to SSX 3. On tour is just, it's a little slower. It's only running at 30 frames per second, and SSX 3 runs at 60, which I don't honestly think is that big of a deal, but playing one right after the other, I can tell that on tour feels a little slower. And the monster trick system in on tour is just a little, it's too out there and weird. You have to use the right analog stick to do monster tricks, and it's just, I don't know, it's just overall, it's not as tight an experience as SSX 3 is.
And you think using the Wiimote and the nunchuck to do motions is going to be better than using the right analog stick?
I think what the number one thing I don't like about using the analog stick for them is that I have to take my hands off the buttons to do it. So that sort of won't be a problem with the Wii version, but I'm really skeptical about drawing the shapes in the air for the Uber tricks in SSX Blur. But the rest of the game looks fantastic.
Cool.
So we'll move on to our virtual consoles. Virtual Console Monday community segment. This last week saw the release of Donkey Kong Country, which Carl already mentioned, Streets of Rage for the Genesis, New Adventure Island, and Legend of Cage.
It's Kage.
Whatever. Legend of Kage.
That just blows.
I've never heard of the damn game, Kage, so.
Yeah. That just blew my mind right there. I never realized it was actually pronounced that way.
Here's the thing about Legend of Kage. If I was listening to Retronauts, and they were talking about Kage, and apparently we gave it a recommended for fans, but everyone on Retronauts basically trashed the game.
Yeah. It's junk. I mean, this goes back to when Pale wrote that Kid Icarus should be recommended for everyone. And I think of all the VC Monday things that we've done, that was the most hotly contested among the staff, because there were a couple people, myself and TYP in particular, and we were like, dude, there's no way you're going to put that up on the website recommended for everyone. It's just not that good. And I think there are people who will appreciate a game like Kid Icarus for nostalgic reasons, and maybe even Kage, God forbid. But the general populace, i.e. everyone, is not going to like Kid Icarus. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I was an objector to that little bit.
Yeah, Kid Icarus is
hard.
That's the thing. It's one of those games where, you know, if you probably played it a long time ago when you were used to games being kind of that crude, if I could use that term. But now when you play it, you're just like, man, this is just, it's just a whole lot of getting beaten up with not a lot of reward.
If I can call childhood taste here, I didn't like Kid Icarus when I originally played it back in the 80s. And I'm definitely not going to like it now.
Johnny was all, this is a 6.5, man.
Seriously. I was like, poor level design, bad AI.
Johnny says,
I'm
totally
see little Johnny Metz doing that too.
Well, yeah.
This game sucks.
But then again, this is coming from a guy who's going for his PhD, so there you go. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's doing that at like 6 years of age, not really a surprise.
Streets of Rage I was thinking of picking up, but I don't really have anyone to play it with. So, and those kind of games, like those beat-em-ups, are only really fun if you have people to play with.
Mm-hmm. I heard Streets of Rage 2 was a lot better.
I almost got Streets of Rage. I almost got it, but then I realized I have Gunstar Heroes, and I already have a co-op, you know, kind of beat-em-up shooter kind of thing, so I figured I didn't really need it.
Well, Konami, or on the ESRB website, Konami has said they're bringing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the NES game, shows up on there now, which doesn't really excite me so much that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is coming, but it excites me that that means there is the future possibility for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4 Turtles in Time, mm-hmm. which was
aren't those games
one of the best beat 'em up
like,
ever.
Ridiculously hard?
No, I've beaten Turtles in Time. It's not that hard.
Turtles in Time is actually really easy, but the
but
original...
it's awesome.
The one it is awesome, but the one on NES is unfreaking believably hard, and I think it's going to be like Kid Icarus. It's a game that so many people had when they were kids because TMNT was this amazing cultural phenomenon, but if you go back and play it now, you're not going to enjoy that game very much. Not only is it really hard, it's also just kind of poorly designed, and the controls are awful. Awful.
That's the one that's not a beat-em-up, right?
Right, it's more like an action game. So you're like, it has the infamous dam level, which is only the second level
yeah.
of the game, and most
the
people never make
level.
It past it. But it's
that,
just brutal.
That level
and,
was the biggest pain in my ass ever, where you had to defuse the bombs.
Yeah, well, it doesn't get any easier after that level.
let's move on and forget about that. Well, there's also New Adventure Island, and that's a TurboGrafx game, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Is it? It's just like a remake of
yeah.
the NES version.
Yeah, Hudson is really into that. That you know, they also remade that same game again for GameCube.
For GameCube,
and PS2.
Yeah, I have it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the same thing. It's a cool. I like the original one on NES, but I don't need
yeah.
to play it really.
Mm-hmm. All right, so our next segment is going to be listener mail. We have two questions this week. Our first one is from Radio Free Nintendo number one fan Saturn. And he sent us a really long email, but he basically asks two questions. So the first one is, why don't more games offer an option to hear the original Japanese voices?
That's a good question, actually. But I think the reason why that is just because of time constraints with localization. And, you know, having to have both of those options in there just might take a little longer.
Yeah, you've
space
got
constraints also.
Yeah,
possibly.
You've got space constraints because you're basically recording twice as much audio if you have the original Japanese voices and the English voices,
mm-hmm.
and then someone has to go through and it's already been translated for the localization, but then someone has to go in and type it all in there and make it subtitled, and you know,
exactly,
it's a lot of time and money
so
that four people are gonna benefit from.
Exactly.
And the other question is, I'm not sure exactly what this means, but he asks, why does so many game characters, like, their animation is strange, and he describes them as like they've got attention deficit disorder.
Yeah, in the email he said he names Metal Gear Solid 4 as an example, like how he's used a specific scene from one of the recent trailers where Snake is sitting with one of the colonels, and they're both like fidgeting around, and it seems like if he was like a real trained agent, he would be able to sit still. And
especially if he's an old man.
Exactly. And yeah, I guess the reason for that is just that, you know, he's trying to make him look alive, so that's why he's animating very vividly. And as far as that goes, I mean, it's really hard to animate someone like a real person. We're still kind of in that uncanny valley as far as visuals go, so it's going to take a while before they get that right.
Uncanny valley.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with, I think Carl is right, and it's kind of the difference between stage acting and movie acting, where you can act more naturally in a movie because the camera's closer to you and you don't have to project out to hundreds of people who are out in the audience and maybe sitting 200 feet away from you. And it's kind of the same thing where, and I think in a game, the problem is that all of the things that on film, even on stage, that you take for granted, like the breathing patterns of people and their natural rhythms and vibrations and things like that, all of that has to be done by hand in a game, and it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard to get that to look natural. And so basically, they want them to be moving their hands around and moving their mouth a lot because it makes them look like they're actually moving. Whereas if you had them just kind of sit still like they would in a natural conversation, you'd probably look at it in the game and think, this looks really dead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You would notice
right.
it. So it's kind of a substitute for that. It's not a good substitute, but, you know, as games progress, it'll get better.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think you're seeing that with a lot of the, you know, a lot of the newer games coming out for the next gen consoles. I think it's just improving a lot, because I mean, a lot of the games, it's the kind of thing where, you know, those subtle movements. It's like if they're not there, you don't notice that they're there. But if they're put in, then you say, oh wow, that looks a lot more realistic when it's actually there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, we also see if they use motion capture, it sort of gets rid of needing to do that also.
Right.
So our other question is from John, and he says he's been listening to our podcast for a while, and he's wondering if he should go and check out all the old episodes to see if you missed anything. And that's not his
of
question,
course.
But the answer to that is yes.
I do it all
his
the time.
His real question is, he says that he was playing Golden Sun the other night, which is his favorite Game Boy Advance game, and he was wondering if the creators are going to be making a Golden Sun 3 anytime.
I doubt it.
Who knows? I mean, they're supposed to make something for Wii, but...
They're making, it. Like, massively multiplayer online golf games right now, so...
Yeah.
It's going to be a while.
I'd say it's a possibility, but if Golden Sun is your favorite GBA game, you really need to go to the store and look around.
It's a little far, but, you know.
Pick up some of the Final Fantasy remakes. They're a hell of a lot better, really.
Mm. All right, so thanks both Saturn and John for those questions. We're going to go into a quick break, and we'll be back with the news. Welcome back to Radio Free Nintendo. Welcome to segment 2, the news. Can get some news music in the background. Maybe in the future will sound very official. There you go.
Typing. Oh, a lot of typing.
First up is some more virtual console news. recently it was announced that
there it is.
MSX and Neo Geo emulation are coming to the virtual console in Japan, which doesn't mean a whole lot for us Americans. But if we get MSX emulation, it means one day we might get the true Metal Gear 2. And
yeah, in Japan, where you can't play it.
Yeah.
It's not coming to America. There's no way. MSX was never released in America. They're not going to bring over that whole platform just so they can spend tons of money to translate a bunch of games that most Americans don't even care about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
Maybe we'll get Neo Geo, but I doubt that, too.
I think we will get Neo Geo, actually, because they announced that PlayStation is going to be getting the PSN network is going to be getting they're going to be getting it soon. So, if anything, that means America might get it too.
Are they going to get
Neo Geo? Is
go ahead, Johnny.
What? Neo Geo is totally possible for America, but I don't know. To me, I just don't care. I mean, I saw like NeoGAF and all these people were kind of exploding when this was announced, and they're like, yeah, Neo Geo, and it's like, you know what? I'm not into really hardcore 2D fighting games, and the only other thing that's worth playing on Neo Geo, in my opinion, is Metal Slug, and that's already on the Wii.
Yeah.
And cheaper, because you can get them all together. Well, Lindemann, you can talk about this, but other than those two series, there's just not really anything on Neo Geo that I care about, and the games are going to be expensive. They were really expensive back in the day. And they're probably going to cost at least as much as N64 games on Virtual Console. Ouch. And it's just not worth it to most people.
Yeah.
Very niche audience.
I think the real irony in all this is the fact that, this is about the only way that you can actually put Neo Geo games out on the marketplace and actually have them stand a chance, because when they first came out, they were like, what, $100, $200 a piece or something like that? I mean,
You
were practically buying the arcade cabinet.
You were actually literally buying the arcade ROM.
Yep.
Like, they took the ROM from the arcade machine and shoved it into a cartridge, and then you plugged that in your machine.
It's like, who are they, Sony?
Oh!
So the other big virtual console news, which is definitely of much more importance to us here in America, is that Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, by the time you hear this podcast, will be out on the virtual console.
Which I'm not that excited.
I echo the ass statement because I already own it on cartridge and on GameCube.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, I'll get it just for, just because I'm a completist. But, hey, Nintendo, you'll suck $10 out of me. Congratulations.
And I think this is...
Now, wasn't this $12 in Japan?
I heard that, but it's only $10 here.
Well, that's good. It's probably good news for those people who remember playing Ocarina and, don't still have their N64 and weren't hardcore GameCube fans. They're just like casual gamers, who picked up Ocarina back in the day and they would like to play it again now. That's great news for them, but for all us hardcore guys, except for, I guess, Lindemann, who's even more hardcore because he's going to buy it again. But for all of us who are hardcore and rational, there's really no reason to own it again.
Well, I was thinking, I'm playing through Twilight Princess, and I don't know, I'm almost tempted to go through Ocarina of Time and just play it again, because, I don't know, maybe it's just because Twilight Princess is the new thing out there, but I'm almost thinking that it's a better game than Ocarina of Time. That's a crazy statement. I don't know.
I think it's much better.
I think it's better in some respects, but it's easier, and it was too easy. Ocarina of Time had a good balance of difficulty.
I think that Ocarina is going to have a more more well-known place in game history, but I think as it stands now, I'd rather play Twilight Princess.
Yeah, I mean, right. The last temple I went through was the Arbiter's Grounds, and I mean the boss battles. Some of the boss battles are easy, but some of them are really impressive. And I mean,
yeah, they're impressive. For sure.
I don't remember. Yeah, I mean, I don't remember Ocarina of Time as being some incredibly hard game, but
maybe it's just because I was younger. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm old, so I might. You know, I'm probably. I have a failing memory of it.
All right, so our next news is this is kind of a shocker that the Wii in the month of January outsold both the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. Almost if you combined their numbers, they would have outsold them. But the Wii sold
not really.
The Wii sold 450,000 units. The Xbox 360 sold just shy of 300, and the PS3 sold about 250,000 units. But it's good news for Nintendo.
Yeah.
These are American numbers.
Yes, these are American numbers.
Yeah. Just America. It doesn't include North America. It's NPD. And it also doesn't include Walmart. So, hey, awesome.
Don't these figures usually include a speculative number for Walmart sales?
I don't know.
If not, I'm sure Walmart's at about the same ratio. I mean,
I think they're projected. These numbers include projected.
This is good news, though. I mean, it's a little skewed because the Wii is still brand new, so obviously there's still, you know, a lot of attention and people really want it. The Xbox 360's already been out a year, so of course, you know, it's not going to be at some insane adoption rate still. Once the Wii sales level out, I think we'll probably see maybe on par with Xbox 360 sales.
Yeah, I think anything, I think these stats just prove that price rules.
Yes.
No matter what you say, no matter what you do, no matter, you know, graphics, obviously this proves that price comes before graphics, before any kind of, like, tech stuff you can put in there.
Yeah, being the loss leader is nice.
I disagree because the difference is if you look back at when GameCube launched, GameCube didn't nearly sell like this in comparison to the other systems after its first Christmas. So, and it was a significant price leader as well. The difference is when you have the combination, and this is the specific combination of price and desire. And mm-hmm. The weird thing is, Wii is not creating desire through the traditional channels. You know,
right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
But you have to have both. You can't just be cheaper. That doesn't work. We've seen that in the past. But if you are desirable in comparison to the others, and you're the price difference, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, I guess on top of the price, I mean, really, the Wii remote and just the entire control scheme really is drawing people in, because people that haven't considered buying a video game console for years are like, wow, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I know a whole bunch of people
I agree.
Like that. I mean, just some anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys I work with that are, like, in their 40s, and they're buying a Wii, and I'm like, wow, I never thought you even played video games at all.
I gotta say, the PS3 numbers don't surprise me. In fact, they're a little higher than I was expecting, because you have all these reports of the system just sitting on shelves throughout the month of January.
Well, you know, according to that recent interview, Jack Trenton owes me about $7,200.
Yeah.
Oh.
That guy's
I saw seven of them sitting at my Best Buy a couple weeks ago.
Well, you know, not only that, but clearly they've already burned through their crazy hardcore people who don't mind spending $600 for a system. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that market is pretty much tapped out, so now they're going to have to really start to appeal to other people beyond those. And third, what games came out on PS3 in January? I mean, we say that Wii had a sucky month, and it did pretty much, but PS3 had nothing
in
January. I think they had Blazing Angels and Sonic.
Sonic.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, they had absolutely nothing, so that's a big factor too. I think PS3 will see an upswing, because now they have Virtual Fighter 5 and MotorStorm coming out.
Does Virtual Fighter really sell though?
In Japan?
I don't know. It has a very large hardcore market. So it doesn't have any mainstream appeal whatsoever. And personally, I could care less about it. It's just way too complicated. It just doesn't appeal to me at all. But considering that it is a really hardcore fighting game, I think for a hardcore market, it's large. And it'll sell pretty well.
Because I remember that the Japanese sales were, it was number one, but it was number one with 60,000 units. And then the next week, it dropped off from number one to like 25.
That's because nobody owns a PS3 in Japan.
Yeah, they all bought it right away.
Could be.
Because they were starving for anything to play. Our next piece of news is that Midway is ramping up their Wii development. I guess they, like other developers, are starting to see that this thing is actually taking off, and they're getting on board.
Yeah, I saw this story this week. I read it up. I got to it via NeoGAF, and basically they were talking about how their some odd amount of titles that they've released already for the Wii have done extremely well. And so, you know, based on how much they spent developing, which was, I'm sure, was, you know, nothing. And so now they're saying, okay, we're going to be a lot more bullish on Wii. We're gonna you know, put a lot more stuff in there. So, great. My only thing about that is, like, what is Midway really going to bring?
Nickelodeon.
Yeah, do you think they're going to ramp up development or ramp up porting?
Yeah.
Ramp up porting.
Definitely. I mean, there might be a little bit more in the realm of development, but I think most of it, 80% of it's going to be ports.
I'm pretty sure they're going to play the Ubisoft game until it stops not working.
That's so disappointing to me. Ubisoft, I mean, I remember last year at E3, Ubisoft was looking, they were looking nice. Everyone was like, Ubisoft, they're definitely in on the Wii full on. And then the Wii rolled out and Ubisoft really tanked. And ironically, EA has stepped up.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really doing a great job.
Well, I think part of that is because EA took longer to work on their games.
Yeah, and they're going to be better.
True.
As a result.
Yeah, I think the games will be better, and they have like 3 or 4 games coming out in March.
Yeah,
and they're all
and
like
the SSX
legit
is
games.
Next week, which is almost March or this week.
Yeah,
yeah. It looks good. I might buy it.
Speaking of gearing up, Disney is gearing up to put their Prince of Persia movie into production. This movie was announced like years ago, like maybe a year after Prince of Persia: Sands of Time is released, because Jordan Mechner, the creator of Prince of Persia and who created Sands of Time and also wrote the script for it, is one of the writers on the film. But Disney is gearing up to release the Prince of Persia: Sands of Time film sometime summer 2008, I guess in the Pirates of the Caribbean slot, since Pirates will be finished by then.
Right.
And it's a Jerry Bruckheimer film.
Oh,
so
God.
Expect to see lots of explosions and yeah.
Well, hey, this is really appropriate to our previous conversation about ports in Ubisoft, because the Wii version of Prince of Persia 3 is coming out pretty soon. And
Rival Swords, port of a PSP game.
From what I've read, it's a complete waste of time.
Yeah, it's the GameCube game.
Like, it sounds like it's exactly the GameCube game with Wii controls, which barely work. And there's nothing else added
to
it.
So
and it's like, you know what? Go buy the GameCube game, which is excellent, for $30 and play it on your Wii.
Yeah.
Yep. With a GameCube controller, which works
Don't
fine.
Don't waste those $20.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you guys, getting back to the movie, who will be, you think, and who should be the prince?
I think it's even too far off. I saw some people saying Josh Holloway, who plays the character Sawyer on Lost, would make a good pick, but I don't think so at all. Whoever it is, he has to be English. And I just can't think of an English actor who comes to my
mind.
What about
Mr. Bruckheimer's friend, Orlando Bloom?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised seeing that, especially since there are rumors that they're going to kill off his character in Pirates of the Caribbean to drop budget costs. They figured that he's not as essential as Johnny Depp and Keira Knightley are to the film, so they're thinking of getting rid of him. So when they make, because they're obviously going to make more Pirates movies after the third one, because
he's a bit pale though, isn't he?
He's also a bit small in frame, if you ask me.
Well, you know, and actually since we're mining a Lord of the Rings cast, if he was a little younger, Viggo would be really
Viggo
good for
work.
It, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually.
I could even see
Hugh
Jackman in the role.
Eh, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was trying to think of, like, a Persian actor, but there just aren't very many.
Are there any?
Not big enough for the American audience, at least.
There aren't many.
So our next bit is Tomy is blaming Nintendo for their low profits. I guess they're sort of saying that Nintendo is making too much good stuff and that they can't make any money because Nintendo's flushing them out of the market.
Well, they did release a Wii game in Japan this week. They released Naruto Gekitu Ninja Taisen X.
So what happens if that doesn't sell? Are they going to blame Nintendo? I don't know.
It will. Oh, no, it will sell because GNT sells pretty well in Japan, so should do well.
That's good for them. Yeah. And
in 6 years, it might come out in America.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, yeah, because it's based on the Shippuden series, which just aired in Japan now, and it's taken, like, 2 years for it to start, so Yeah, it's going to be a while.
I mean, all I can say is if I was a stockholder in Tomy, I would be like, what? That's the best excuse you could do for your crappy performance? Yeah. It was Nintendo's fault? Like, I think everybody should start to use that. Like,
I didn't win,
you know, like,
the
GM.
The 500-yard dash because that guy from that other country is faster than me. Well, that's how it works.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. I can't sell lemonade because Minute Maid is cornering the market.
Because kids are inside playing that damn Nintendo Wii. So they don't come outside to buy lemonade anymore.
That's right.
You just blame everything on Nintendo.
Our last bit of news this week is that Nintendo's updated their Japanese lineup, and there's a couple big games in here. First of all, there's going to be a sequel to Oenden, which is better known as Elite Beat Agents over here in America.
Awesome.
Which is surprising because from what I remember, the first game didn't sell terribly well in Japan.
No,
but I guess
it didn't.
Nintendo has faith. Mm. I don't know.
Maybe they're going to put in an all English mode for to help out the importers this time around.
Hopefully.
I also wonder, is it going to be a game that's not going to be? Are they going to separate the Oenden and Elite Beat Agents as a series, or is Oenden just going to be Elite Beat Agents 2? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. I don't think it'll be. Are you saying like, will it be just a Japanese version of Elite Beat Agents?
Like, no, what I'm saying is like, I'm wondering is Oenden 2 going to come to the U.S. as Elite Beat Agents 2, or are they going to just develop another game and call that Elite Beat Agents 2?
Oenden is so Japanese. Yeah. I just don't see them bringing it to America. That was the whole point of Elite Beat Agents. I mean, mm-hmm. It's cool if they, as long, you know, the good thing about this is if they're actually considering a sequel to Oenden, which sold like maybe 60,000 copies total, including mm-hmm. all the importers, who were the majority of the people who bought that game. They have to be thinking about a sequel to Elite Beat Agents because it sold like five times that much.
Oh yeah, it sold something like 300,000, which is really well for a game like that.
Yeah, so this is good news for anybody who likes Elite Beat Agents. Not only can you now import Oenden 2, which plays the same and will be great, but just really Japanesey, but mm-hmm. the prospects look really good for an Elite Beat Agents 2 a couple years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Probably awesome. As soon as they're done.
So that's a whole lot of tapping.
And then also on the list, other large games, there's Animal Crossing for Wii is on the list, which I guess is, it's not really a shocker to me.
Sort of.
Mm-hmm. My personal favorite is Panel de Pon for DS, which is better known as, over here in the States, as either Tetris Attack or Puzzle League or Pokemon Puzzle League.
So tell me why that matters.
Because it's the best damned puzzle game ever.
It's on every single platform, and it's not a big surprise.
Yeah, it's really good, but it's also going to have, according to something, I read this on NeoGAF, we seem to be sourcing them a lot this episode, but translations of the of the information for the game say that it's going to have four-player Wi-Fi, and apparently you can voice chat while you play.
What?
Sweet.
So I'm excited for that. Sure. That game is going to be sweet. And also on the Wii listing... There's Big Brain Academy, which I think was mentioned already. Dave Crisis is still on track for 2007. Did anyone see
and
the first
like
screenshot of that game?
Yeah, that looks
ugly.
Awful.
I mean, I won't speak for the gameplay, but it looks ugly.
Which is surprising, because Monolith Soft as a company usually puts out pretty good graphics.
Yeah,
I mean,
Xenosaga
looks pretty great. And Bat and Kaidos looks really great, too. So I'm hoping that when they optimize it, it'll look a lot better.
Yeah. And that's basically everything that's... Oh, and there's also a Kirby game coming out for Wii, which was the other big...
Probably the same thing. GameCube game from before.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. And there's also Wii Health Pack, which some people think it may be the biggest game to come out in Japan this year.
Wow.
Could be.
And we don't even know anything about it, but if you look at the sales of Wii Sports over there, where they actually had to buy Wii Sports separately, that's a legitimate prediction,
I
think.
So like 1.3 million.
Enormous.
Yeah. And this game is being developed, it's Miyamoto's personal team, and I guess it's some sort of, way to get your family in shape or something? Is that how they described it?
Maybe. I don't know.
It's gotta be like DDR or something, you know, like, basically an excuse to exercise by using a video game, and the Wii plays pretty much perfectly into that, mm-hmm. and if it's coming from Nintendo, it should be high quality, and it'll be huge. It'll be a big deal.
Awesome.
So that's all the news that's fit to podcast this week. We'll be back in a moment with our feature segment on the new E3. Welcome back to Radio Free Nintendo. We now move on to our feature segment. I'm going to start with a little sentence and then we can just go off from there. This is regarding the new E3, and many people say that E3 is going to be a disaster this year and that it's better if it just goes away for good. What do you guys think?
I hope not.
No.
I've never gone. I want to go.
No.
Well, I think there's definitely a certain possibility for it being a disaster this year. But even if next year it's the same as it is this year, like as far as setup is concerned, they'll know what they're doing by next year. But this year, definitely, there's a lot of uncertainty out there about what is going to happen, and no one even knows if they're going to be invited yet.
I don't really get the pessimism here. I mean, E3 has always been a very well organized event. Now, obviously, they're doing a lot of untested things with it this year. It's going to be totally different. But the people who organize it are still, you know, they're still the organizers this year. I have no reason to think that it's going to be a sloppy, unprofessional mess. As far as the actual structure of it, I've said ever since they announced it last year that I'm really looking forward to the new format because it seems like it's going to be a lot more efficient and just a lot less taxing, and we're going to get exposed to more games and have more quality time with them without having to fight through crowds of people who have no business being there. So I see nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Now, so I'm really looking forward to it.
I think things will be a little shaky this year, but they'll still be solid. This, you know.
Now, do you think going forward it'll be the place to announce, like, make the big announcements?
I think for that, we're probably going to see them spread out more. I think we're still going to see a lot of big announcements at E3, because that's a given. That's never going to change. But we're going to see, even last year we started seeing Nintendo and everyone making bigger announcements at events like GDC. And I mean, GDC is in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure we're going to see some big announcements there. Miyamoto is doing the keynote.
Yeah, like five Nintendo keynotes. I mean geez,
Miyamoto is doing
happen.
The keynote. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he brings Health Pack with him.
Well, the new E3 is going to be more of a press event than it was before, because I don't think they're going to have more press. They're probably going to have less press than they did before, but it's going to be a larger percentage of the attendees. And anytime you get a whole lot of press together and you have big corporations there who are competing against each other, guess what's going to happen? They're going to announce things to get your attention, to bring you, not only to pull you towards them so you give them more coverage, but to pull you away from their competitors. So it's an inevitability. If you have 1,000, 1,200 members of the press at E3, I don't know how many they're planning to put there, but you consider it's going to be a large percentage of the attendees, and you have all the major companies there. There will be press conferences, there will be major game announcements. It's still in July, it's still a ripe time to make game announcements for the fall and to show games that they've announced before but have never really shown to anyone. It's the perfect time to do that. It's still going to happen.
Yeah, it's still situated at the right time of the year with the right people. It's just going to be a little smaller.
Now, I was listening to one of yours a couple weeks ago, and one of their guys, Shane Bettenhausen, was talking about how it's really better if E3 dies down because, you know, for big places like EGM and Game Informer and all those places like that, I mean, publishers really court them anyway, so they're flown out all the time to go play new games, or they're brought new games in their offices. But really, for smaller places like us or other, you know, high tier fan sites, doesn't happen. You know, we don't have those kind of opportunities very often.
We don't have a physical office.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
for them to come to.
But yeah, so I mean, it's definitely not. E3 is kind of always been, you know, for the fan sites or for blogs and stuff, a great place to go, because not only is it a great place to meet other people like us, but just because it's our big event of the year.
Yeah, and I think
so. I don't know.
You know, we all talk about how things aren't really going to change much for Sony and Nintendo, and they're not going to change much for EGM and, you know, the other big publications out there. But for the smaller publications as well as for the smaller developers, you know, they might have everyone's speculating as to what's going to happen to the smaller developers. Apparently, they weren't even informed of the changes to E3 until the public was informed of the changes to E3, whereas some of the larger companies were in on the planning of the new E3.
But yeah, so it's definitely something that we all definitely have our eyes on, for For sure.
For sure, yeah.
Because this year's going to be important, if not special.
Yeah, this is a very important year for E3. Very important year for... very important year
for Can we all hold hands while we say that?
E3 and everyone presenting at E3. And it'll be interesting to see how things pan out. I mean, do you guys think... The obvious wheel still the big press conferences, but I remember reading something about... isn't the ESA designing everyone's booths this year? I think I remember something about something like the ESA is planning out booth space or making it so, you know, like, it won't be like, I guess, excuse the phrase, but it won't be the slut fest that E3 was.
Boo!
Boo!
I'm sure it's
going
to be a lot more tightly controlled. There won't be booth babe. There won't really be any need for booth babes because the public won't be there.
Right.
There really should never have been booth babes at E3, but because they let in so many people who had no business, literally no business to do there, that you know, they found that they could attract people to their booths just by doing this arbitrary stuff like giving away little toys and having
that's how auto shows work.
That's not going to happen anymore.
You heard it here first, guys. Johnny Metz, not a fan of the ladies.
No.
I knew it.
The booth babes. They're idiots and they get in the way and they have no idea what they're talking about. And more than that, it's not just the booth babes by themselves. It's the people who crowd around them and block up E3 so you can't even walk. I mean, one time it took me I got to Activision's booth and I had an appointment with them. It took me 10 minutes to work my way through the crowd to the center of their booth to check in at the desk.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
Like, to move 20 yards, it took me 10 minutes. Absolutely, completely ridiculous.
Yeah,
and that's
because
they had this giant half pipe set up, and Tony Hawk and Bam Margera were doing kickflips and things in the middle of the LA convention center. Insane. I don't ever want to see that again. I mean, it just has no business being there. It was
completely.
Yeah,
it's E3 got completely ridiculous. I mean, I remember I started going in 2003, and even then, you know, it was a little. It was much more toned down than it was in 2006. It was
I mean, it became a circus after a while. I remember the one E3 with the wrestling match between Sting and somebody else. So they had a wrestling ring literally set up on the show floor.
A full-size one.
It was
then,
crazy.
Yeah.
A full-size wrestling ring set up, and you know, you could go there at 3 o'clock or whatever, and you could watch a wrestling
Nintendo
match.
Even tried that one year. I remember one year Nintendo had this large circular stage in the middle of their booth, and they would like truck out celebrities like 3 or 4 times a day, and it would have worked if they'd hired like celebrities that anyone gave two craps about. But it was always like AC Slater from Saved by the Bell, and like guys like that.
And here it's like, and here's Gary Coleman.
It was random guy from Real World season 6.
Oh.
It was that kind of stuff.
They had the idea right, but they completely missed the point by like 4 million yards. They were they didn't care. You know, they was like, oh, these are celebrities. People will show up. Okay. Mm. But they did have ice cream a couple of years, and that was a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think what we're really worried about here is what will be the fate of the bacon-covered hot dogs?
Yeah, those poor hot dog vendors. What are they going to do for that week? They're not going to make enough money.
They started to drive them out a couple years ago because they were doing business too close to the convention center, so it got to where you had to walk pretty far to get
sad.
One anyway, and I think that...
I mean, you know, if it's a convention center muscle trying to force you to eat at their cafeteria that charges $10 for a hamburger.
Yep.
I remember there were a couple of times at E3 when I just wouldn't eat all day because it was too expensive. I had a big breakfast.
That's what I usually do.
Yikes.
Either I get a free media lunch or I don't eat.
That's what we all tried to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if E3 doesn't work out this year, what do you guys think of E4? Do you think that might work out?
I have a good story. I have a good story about E4. Johnny, I think I've told you this story before. My roommate Dan Dormer, who actually records for the Player One podcast now, or my former roommate, took a class last year in college where we have these classes. When you're a freshman at our university, you have to take like this regular English writing class, and then you have to take the second level of it. And you can either take the generic second level, or you can take a specialized second level, which is like writing about film noir, or writing about, I think there was writing about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, writing about stuff like that. It would all depend on, because the grad students would teach them, so like whatever the grad student was interested in, that's what it would be writing about. I remember one of them was writing about Jack Kerouac, but then last year he took it and he did writing about video games, and the grad student who was teaching it, she was talking about E3, and she said, well, you know, if you guys do good enough in this class, next year you might get to go to E4.
Oh.
It was gold. It was gold.
Did she mean, was she actually talking about E3 and she just didn't know
the name of it? She was talking, she knew like what E3 was, but I guess she assumed that this was like the third year it had ever been done, and that next year it would be E4. She was definitely like,
well, it's good to see they had
and thought it was E4. So,
ouch.
It's good to see that they had well-qualified individuals teaching these classes. So, hey, some of those people might actually get to go to E4 this year.
Maybe.
And they'll probably be disappointed because it's run by GamePro.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
right.
Here's the thing, though, because it is being run by IDG Entertainment, who does Macworld. So, I mean, it has
Macworld's pretty,
they have experience.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay,
fair but enough. I think it's still...
And
E4All is going to be what E3 was. Except it's going to be what E3 was times about a million in the booth babe factor. It's going to be more equivalent to an auto show where, you know, anyone can go in and it's literally going to be everyone vying for your attention with their new product, except it's not going to be their new in-development product. It's going to be their product that's about to come out because they don't want to show you something that's unfinished.
Right.
And that was always the reason that E3 was, you know, industry only in the first place, is because developers don't want to show a half-finished game to someone and let them make their purchase decision on it. They want to show it to someone who knows it's a half-finished game and can relate that this game is still in progress.
In theory.
But then you let everyone who works at Electronics Boutique in, and it just turns into, I don't know, a monster.
Mm. Yes. Crap.
Good riddance.
Yeah.
So I think we've gone all along with this our feature topic, and we will leave you now, lest we ramble on too much. We'll be back. We'll be back next week. I'm sure I'll have all sorts of opinions on SSX Blur for you, because I've been obsessed with that series forever.
Yeah, I might be picking it up too, so I'm gonna have some opinions on that myself.
Have you played an SSX game before, Carl?
I haven't. This will be my first.
Okay, so it'll be good if you're there and I'm there. We can get opposing views from someone who's never played one and someone who's played all of them, excluding the original.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So, on behalf of my compatriots, Jonathan Metz, John Lindemann, and Carl Castaneda, I would like to thank you for listening to this week's Radio Free Nintendo, and please invite you to send us any listener mail or comments or questions that you might have to our email address, which is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I've been your host, Mike Sklenz, and we are now putting the lid on another episode of Radio Free Nintendo.
Ka-chink!
Later.
Bye.
Later, everybody.